PhD lab.
Yeah.
He served as assistant to Governor Buford Ellison.
Nice.
And I worked real hard with him to help Buford Ellison get elected. And so, and he has been my friend over the years. Whenever I needed an attorney,
yeah,
he was always there to go to court with me, help me out with anything. When I got ready to get my divorce from my husband, he was my attorney. So, and we worked in politics and NACP and stuff with it. Before Maxine, it was H.T. Lockett working in the NACP. Right out of his office on Beale Street, he had an office on Beale. So we worked together for years.
So were you involved with the NAACP, working with him before
Yes, I was, you know, just whatever he needed me to do, help write some memberships. Like most of the times, I would be the person who helped with food whenever they went to picket or do anything. I was always in the background if I wasn't going with them to picket.
Wow. So you've had a really long history that continues today of involvement.
Yeah. Well, see, I never stopped. Because like in my community, I always make sure my community is organized and work with the people and any kind of information they need, like CSA. I'm chairman of CSA. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I'm chairman of that board, you know, advisory board for them. And, you know, just about anything people need to know, when it's like bill money available or when any other needs, like somebody might lose their job and can't pay their house. No, see, CSA has a pod, a structure that will help you if you meet the criteria.
Okay.
So then, you know, if somebody calls and asks me information, I seem to have the information they need because I'm on all these boards. So it helps the community.
Sure, sure. When you began your involvement with H.T. Lockhart,
all everything was going on then. You had to ride the back of the bus. If you wanted to go in some of these evil places, you had to go in the back door. They, you know, it just wasn't open. You had to use, like my baby, he was 5 years old. He didn't want to drink colored water. We went to Goldsmith department stores. You couldn't even try on hats at some department stores. It was bad back in that time. And, you know, it was just, people were getting killed and everything else back in that day, trying to get folks registered to vote and stuff. And you didn't have, you just getting an opportunity back in the 60s to get some elected officials that were black, you know. So what we did was help to elect most of the white candidates back like in the 50s, leading on up into the early 60s, until we got enough blacks elected and some whites that would vote for blacks too. Get our first elected officials.
Yeah.
Like Sugarman, he got elected back then, Willis. Jesse Turner, and you know, and H.T. Lockett back in the early times, it was just a few blacks getting on. But you know, only up in later in the 70s, we started getting more people on the county. The squires at first, just three squires. So we had Lockett served as a squire, Jesse Turner served as a squire, and then in the later years, all up in the 70s, got to be the county commissioner where they would have more people on that. So then, you know, we got to the point where we could have at least 5 and 6 people on the county commission and the city council. Half of the city council is black now. We have a black mayor, city and county mayor. But see, back until these late years, up in the 80s and 90s, you didn't have all of that. You know, back then, it just wasn't nothing opened up to us. We had to fight for everything we got. That's why it was picketing, people going to jail. Maxine and Vasco stayed in jail more than anybody. You know, it was just hard back in the early 60s and stuff like that, 50s. Like about 54 on up until I guess about 64. You know, it was just harder then.
Yeah.
But by the time it got up in the 60s, we were getting black elected officials, or blacks who had influence, and some whites that would, you know, would help people. Because I started working for the Sheriff's Department in 1962 under Hines. And then after that, you know, we got other sheriffs, and I worked under them, like Bill Morris. I worked under Bill Morris.
Someone else
that
I talked to.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, I worked very good with him as a school crossing guard.
And he told me that he was elected
with last board. That's
right. What did you...
Hines was, too.
M.A. Hines?
Uh-huh.
Okay, sure. So were you doing voter registration work through the NAACP before Maxine Smith came in and started...
I started out with... trying to get voter registration with Locket.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And I'm through with Maxine.
Okay, sure.
So, but the, it was just different, you know, getting people to register to vote then than it is now, see?
Yeah.
Because people know that their vote counts now, so that, you know, I would say 70% of the people in Memphis are registered to vote now, where back then it was a small amount.
Well, see,
we, it's like, we had, we were so organized by ward and precincts,
yeah.
Till we would have, like, street captains, and you could always get a street captain to say, let's work this area. You know, you work a street, I work a street, and like that, and
yeah.
And, and that's how we really built up voter registration back then. You had good street captains, and, like, the younger people were not work as hard as the people did that's in their 70s and 80 years old now. You know, like I'm 77. But back then, all those people up until, you know, that's older, they worked real hard to accomplish their goals because they was tired of getting on the back of the bus. They was tired of going to the back door. They were tired of, you know, you go downtown and buy clothes and you couldn't even try them on. Then having any blacks working in the stores and stuff like that, you know, like cashiers or salesmen or something like that. It was just very few people working in those capacities then. See, now if you educated, know what to do, or know how to use a computer, you can get a job anywhere you want. All you got to do now is be qualified. But it took a lot of blood, sweat, and going to jail for that. Because even at Memphis State, my daughter went to Memphis State. And they went to jail for Memphis State because the teachers out there weren't teaching them like they would teach the other children, you know, when they integrated to school.
When did she go to Memphis State?
I had two go to Memphis State. One went to Memphis State and about, she graduated in 1964. So that's my oldest daughter. She went to Memphis State. And then my next daughter, she probably went about 5 years later, and they still hadn't fully integrated the thing.
Right.
Because they went to jail.
Why were they protesting? Or why?
Yeah, they was protesting, and they went in the dean's office, and they just loaded up a city bus and carried all the black students on downtown to jail.
Were they sitting in the dean's office?
They were sitting in,
yeah.
Picking in and stuff like that, right out in Memphis State. And they went to jail. Some people couldn't even get a job after that because, see, if you had a record of going to jail, regardless of what it was, you were black and you couldn't get no job. So if you didn't get your child's records cleared up before he graduated from college to need a job, you couldn't work for the government because they wouldn't give you a job. But yet, they weren't doing any crimes that we would say we were just picking for our rights. Trying to get to achieve the things that everybody else had that we wanted and felt that we had a right to be able to go in the front door or go to a bathroom and not have to go to a segregated bathroom, ride in the back of the bus. You know, you could be sitting in a seat halfway the bus and a person could come ask you to get up. Even the bus driver would stop the bus and say, move farther to the back. So that means you had to stand up. And you could have just got off of work and be tired. You could go and leave it, so another store downtown where they had hats and stuff that you had your grandma back in the 50s and 60s. Because of the fact, they just didn't want you to try on the goods because they felt that, you know, you wasn't a full-class citizen, so you didn't have a right to try on. So you could buy it, but then you couldn't try it on. That's why you see yourself buying a pair of shoes and you couldn't try them on.
So bizarre.
But those things happen. You know, people were beat, killed, sent to jail and everything just to have rights. That younger people now that's under 30, they just don't believe this. What's wrong with y'all? Y'all just, ooh, y'all just scared folks. But see, they live in that day when if you did something, they sick the dogs on you, the police come and take you to jail and beat you to half to death. You see what I'm saying? So then some children still can't understand. Like if I told my granddaughter that's 15 years old, stuff that happened, it just don't sound real to her. It sound like, what's wrong with y'all? Why y'all didn't step up and do this and do that? Who was you gonna do? Because the police gonna come and carry y'all in jail. If you had no money, how you gonna get out?
I understand too that you had like the 18-month boycott of Main Street. Were you involved with that?
We had to have Black Mondays at schools, everything else.
Yeah. What was Main Street like? Why was that chosen as a target?
Because that's where most people spend their money, downtown. And that was the big downtown. See, downtown now don't mean the same thing as it did then, because like all the stores were downtown. All the stores you see in these malls, they were all on Main Street back then. It was just stores all up and down the Lawrence Street, Goldsmith, Levis. All the big main stores were on Main Street. So that's where people spent their money, but you didn't have a right to try the clothes on. Look at them too much. You know, like you pick up stuff and open it up and look at it. They didn't want you to do that. If you wanted something, you had to know what you wanted back. And that's the way it was. So a lot of people just stayed in jail so much, like Vasco and Maxine, they stayed in jail more than anybody. Because it was always something going on. And like marches and stuff like that, the people that just wasn't afraid to get out, you're going to get something done to you anyway, so why not go to jail for something worthwhile?
Did you go to jail at all?
No, I never did go. My children in the later years, but I never went because of the fact you had to have somebody to man the offices, man the telephones, have some food ready for the picketers when they come in.
Yeah.
So me and Miss Sugarman, Buster Sugarman's wife, used to stay back behind a lot and fix the food.
You
fix
the food for who?
The picketers.
Okay.
You know. So she and I would, if you read in that book, she and I worked together doing a lot of that stuff.
So you were, during this time, a volunteer at that
end? Uh-huh. I was a volunteer for just about anything you need to do.
Wow. So you were doing that right from with Locker in 54 onward?
Uh-huh. Just on and on.
Yeah.
Because see, like in when Locker was assistant to Governor Buford Ellison.
Yeah.
They had to integrate, you know, like the Black children who got in trouble, they went to Pikeville. The white boys went to another institution. So when they had to integrate that institution about in 1965, and H.T. was assistant to Buford Ellison, the governor, well then my son was used as one of the Blacks to help integrate the white facility where they sent the white boys. You know, what they needed, the white boys had been working there all the time.
Yeah.
But they didn't have any Blacks.
Yeah.
Because wasn't any Black children over there. But see, back when Buford Ellison was governor, that's when they integrated the institution.
Yeah.
And then my son was one of the first Blacks who worked over there with other college students.
Yeah. What institution
was this? I don't know exactly which one at the time, but this was in Nashville where he was going to school. He was going to Tennessee State. Uh-huh. And Lockett was in Nashville because he was assistant to the governor.
Yeah.
Because he had helped people there to get elected.
What type of institution was that?
It's just like Pikeville. That's where they sent black children. You know, like you go in the juvenile court.
Oh.
It was the system.
Oh, it was the juvenile court system, and before it was white
black. Uh-huh.
And that your son was the first to intervene.
But he was like white boys had been working there all the time.
Yeah.
They didn't have any blacks over there. So he worked in the juvenile system.
Oh, I see.
You know, they did like watch over the boys. Go look at them and see if they doing everything right. And you had somebody you had to call, like a guard or something. You had to report. If you didn't report, then the guards would come over there to see what was wrong.
Okay, sure.
So they worked like at night.
Yeah.
And they went to college in the daytime.
Sure.
And they were paid to do that, and that helped them through college.
Yeah. When a student's back a little more toward the voter registration. When you did voter registration in the late 50s or mid 50s, late 50s, early 60s, did you face any resistance in terms of getting blacks registered to vote?
I didn't have any problem because I lived in this community.
Yeah.
And this is where I did most of my voter registration, in the community, because we were the one knocking on doors.
Yeah.
And you work your own street.
Yeah.
And you get other people to work the street. And we was doing it through the Civic Club,
okay.
Democrat Club.
Yeah.
And like that.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
What were civic clubs like back in the 50s?
Well, see, like we had the Walker Home Civic Club that we still have now.
Right.
And, you know, people back then, you have a whole room of folks when you went to a meeting because, see, we were in the county and we were fighting to get into the city. We had the elementary school when we moved here in 54. But see, we wanted a high school, so then by 57, we got a high school. But we had to go to the county school board and, you know, get the superintendent and the school board members to go on and build our high school that they had promised us when we moved out here.
Yeah.
So it was like everything you got, you had to put up some energy for it. So at that time, everybody went to Civic Club meetings and Democrat Party meetings because it was things they needed. Community, and that was the only way you get them to get people elected who would be sensitive to your needs.
Okay.
So then, with a lot of black registered voters, and when you belong to the Democrat Club, see, they had like, it's Sugarman and all them to tell you, we can deliver you so many votes.
Yeah.
Because they were organized.
Yeah.
And that's how come it worked so well, because of the fact. All of us was working on the umbrella, you know, with the Democrat Club. And all of us was working on the umbrella with the Civic Club.
Yeah.
So then all these different leaders working together, that could make you get just about anything you wanted because they were all working together. Until in the later years, like up in the 70s, when, you know, different people decided they want to be the leader. You know, people decide I want to be a leader. So they started moving out in their communities. And that's what made you have different groups working in different areas.
And also the NAACP, understand?
Then NAACP. See, everybody was working in one thing to achieve a certain goal.
Yeah.
You know, we have NAACP meeting every 4th Sunday. You have Democrat Party meeting on a certain time.
Yeah.
You know, you have your Civic Club meeting. Like our Civic Club meeting was last night.
Yeah.
Every 4th Monday, the Walker Home Civic Club meeting. Other areas might be on a different day.
Sure.
But they would have a council of the Civic Club where all the Civic Club presidents would go to a meeting once a month. So that's what made you be like under umbrella because you were working with groups. See, people don't work as well now as they did then. You know, like, you got PTOs and PTAs and like that. But see, at one time, we just had all PTAs, Parents Teachers Association. you know, everybody working together, and when you would go to a meeting where the civic clubs meet, the city council meet, everybody would be meeting at that particular group. And just like now, you got all kind of organizations having voter registration. When back then, it all came either on the civic club or the Democrat club. Okay. You see what I'm saying?
And also under the NAACP registration.
See, like,
those were the three main organizations.
See, like, I'm on the board for the NAACP. Then we have a political action committee.
Yeah.
That meet, just like we had this forum Sunday for all candidates to come and say what they had to say, but we don't endorse candidates. But we do have a forum every election to make sure people get an opportunity to talk to the candidate and find out what they are going to do.
Were you doing that in the 50s and 60s as well, having candidate forums?
Yeah, you had them, but you have them broader now than you did then.
You
mean more candidates come down than back then? But back then, it seemed like to be a main vehicle for political action was the Shelby County Democratic Club. And then got a lot.
I know that you were up with
Forrest
candidates.
You
can talk about how that worked.
See, different groups would endorse different candidates. And especially if you knew a candidate that was going to help the black community in any way.
Yeah.
Then blacks supported the white candidates. And that meant that if you supported the white candidates, you could always ask them to give people a job. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't the job you wanted, like Bill Myers, he was going to have some of the policemen. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Hines, he was going to have so many. It is always some black person who worked in politics to get people jobs, whoever had the power to hire.
Right, right.
So that's the way that went.
Yeah. You've touched on this already, but what were your short-term and long-term goals of political action?
Oh, well, it would be political action, the NAACP, is to educate the voter so that he would know how to select candidates. You don't tell them who to vote for, but you tell, you know, the information is out there, but you know enough about the candidate to know if you want to support the candidate.
Yeah.
You don't tell people who to vote for, but it's like educating people. We make sure you get registered first.
Yeah.
Then once you get registered, we try to educate you how to deal with evaluating candidates.
Yeah.
You know, you have history, you have background, and you'll know. What state legislators, you know, they have grades. We have a grading system with the NAACP political action.
Yeah.
Where you grade a candidate how he has voted on issues. Whatever issues they meet, you know, they get grades like.
Yeah.
And so when they hand out a report card on how candidates voted, then you make your own decision whether this candidate did anything or voted on any issues that would help you in any way. So that's what we do with political action. It's really like registering the person, educating the person, letting the person know how to go about evaluating the candidate.
Yeah.
That's what political action is all about, is making sure that you understand. And we make sure that people have a way to the polls on election day.
Yeah.
All the people that we register to vote, they keep records on where they can call them and let them know it's the election, go vote. Election, go vote.
Okay. Is that what you were doing also in the 50s and 60s?
Well, back in the 50s and 60s, they would give each person who was a member so many names and out of your precinct and ask you to be responsible for calling all these members that's in your precinct.
This was with the Democratic Club?
Democratic Club.
Yeah.
And your civic club, just about everybody was working. And see, when we started getting our own state legislators, like our state legislators give us a list of most of the elected, the registered voters in their precincts, because they want you to call them and make sure those people get out and go vote.
Right.
So they go to the election commission and get a list of all the registered voters.
And What do you remember about the 59 election?
Oh yes, we was right there to help him in any way we could and beg people to go vote. That's your biggest problem back in that time, in the early time, was to make sure we went to the polls and voted.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes people get the idea, well, my vote ain't gonna count anyway. You know, they didn't do this. You know, when it came time for Bush elect, they claimed the folks still cheated. What I'm saying.
So how were you able, I noticed in the 59 election it did end up being the largest turnout ever of black and white Americans. How were you able to overcome this apathy that you faced or other challenges and get people to obstacles?
Well, it's just like right now. People are concerned about the wall that we are in right now. Some people feel we shouldn't have ever been there, right? Now some feel that since we are there, we got to stay there. So people evaluate the candidates like that. And when election time comes, they are going to go to the polls based on what they feel Bush have accomplished or what he has done.
Yeah.
Can somebody else do better?
Yeah.
That's really how you get folk out to vote. If they decide they want to get rid of Bush, everybody going to vote. If they decide they don't care, it ain't going to make no difference. Then they won't have to go vote.
So your way of getting them out was you tied it to the issues and said if you go out and vote, you know, these are, you know, if you're doing something good for the black community, these are those sorts of persuasion statements to the issues.
See, if you are satisfied and feel like whoever the president is, that he's doing a good job,
yeah,
then you're going to go vote for him. Because I tell people, if you stay at home and don't go vote for nobody because you ain't even, except for instance, if you don't like care and you stay at home, you vote for Bush, whether you pull the leave or not.
Yeah.
Now, I tell people, I try to get them to understand that if you don't like care, you are voting for Bush if you stay at home.
Yeah.
You've got to go to the polls and decide which is the lesser of the evil, whichever one to do a better job.
Right.
So you go to the polls and vote. Because if you don't vote, you still vote for Bush. Because if Karen don't get the vote, how can he win? One vote could count.
So
that's the way you do it now.
Yeah.
You either going to vote for Bush or you going to go vote for Karen. You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And you are never going to find a candidate that's going to meet all your specifications.
Yeah.
That's going to do what you want to do.
Right, right.
So you got to decide what's best for everybody. So that's how you vote. You don't cast your vote because what you like. You just got to like this person, like all his ways, because nobody's going to satisfy you that way.
Yeah.
You have to decide what's best for all the people.
Yeah.
Is Bush best for them? Or is Kerry a better person to replace him until you find something better?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how you have to think about politics.
Right. And that's how you were thinking about it back in the 50s.
That's the way you think about every election, even when you didn't have a black one, and if it was a white, you evaluate the best white candidate.
Yeah.
And you were going to have people over here that you believed in, like Sugarman, Willis, H.T. Blocker. Since you had trust in those men,
right. Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You went along with whatever decision they made that we ought to make. You know, you have a meeting, they would present these candidates to you.
Yeah.
And they would recommend to you out of whoever was running, which was the best person that we ought to support. And if we want to elect this person and we want to get things from him, all of us got to stick together. Votes is what folks, candidates count. They don't count all this talk. They want to see the votes. And they know whether they got more black folks that got them in.
Yeah.
Or whether the white got them in. Because without that black vote, that other man might have won.
Right, right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what elected officials count, is how you vote.
Yeah.
What precinct you vote now. They know the precincts that vote real good. They know 75-1, the precinct I live in, is a good vote precinct. So then they gonna put answers on this precinct because they know they can get the majority of the votes out of these 75. See, it's about 12, 75 precincts. And so it might be 75, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all up to 12. So they know that those are good voting precincts.
Yeah.
So they are going to put more time, more money in that area to make sure they get the votes out of there, because those people believe in going to vote. They might have a precinct over in another area that don't vote as well. So they do some things in that area, but they're going to put their time in the area they know where the folks are going to vote and where the leadership is.
Yeah.
They know they can depend on certain leaders to help them deliver the vote. That happened in the 50s and 60s, and it's happening still now.
Yeah.
It's just that now people are more educated on voting, so they kind of know what they want to do themselves more than they did back then.
Right. So you were involved, were you at the board meetings of the Shelby County Democratic Club with candidates who come that you could hear and you decide to endorse?
Uh-huh.
What did you typically ask candidates?
Well, if you had been looking at the TV this week, you'd have heard me ask a candidate who is running against Rita Clark. He said that he was going to, first he asked the question, anybody want to pay taxes? I was the only person who held up my hand that I didn't mind paying taxes.
Okay.
So then when it was time for question and answers, I told him, I said, well, I'm the person who say I didn't mind paying taxes. Because if you're going to be able to give back all these taxes and lower the valuation on homes, because that's what makes you pay more taxes, the value on your house. If your house is valued, like I tell them, I paid $7,300 for this house, but now it's valued at $47,000.
Yeah.
So then I pay taxes according to the $47,000, so I want to know how you're going to reduce that. Okay, then his answer was that Rita Clark had so many apparent employees, like he was going to get rid of half of them. So I said, well, if you're going to get rid of half of those apparent employees, who's going to go and evaluate the value on the house? You going? Because if you don't have those people, somebody got to go. Unless we're going to do it on a computer. And you wouldn't know the house next door to me is falling down. So that would cut down on the value of my house. Because if you're looking at the computer, you're looking at my house. And you go by, I got two full baths, so you evaluate my house higher than you do the house next door because of that particular situation. So when you have candidates where you talk to, you evaluate them according to all the things that they tell you they're going to do. Because I told him he didn't set the tax rate, so he couldn't control that. That's when he said he couldn't get rid of like half of the apprentice officials. And you can save so much because some of them make $60,000,
$70,000,
$90,000, and all that. So if he cut off half of them, you know, he could turn this money back into the tax money. You know, that's the way he wanted to say it, that he was going to do it. But see, I don't believe everything you tell me. That's why I asked the person. So it's just like any candidates who come and tell you, you want to know what they're going to do different from the people you got now.
Yeah.
And they tell you, they run as a state legislator, and they're going to tell you that they are going to get a tax pass where people who live in other cities, like if you live in Arkansas but you come here to work every day, you're going to pay a payroll tax.
Right.
He can't pass NAN law, not NAN, because it takes a certain amount of people to pass a law. And if all the state legislators who get elected in Memphis, they can't go to Nashville and pass a law by themselves, they got to have some other elected officials from the small towns, like Nashville, Murfreesboro, they got to get somebody to vote with them. You can't pass no law by yourself. So Anna used to tell me all this you're going to do. Because some of the stuff the state legislature that's already there would have passed the payroll tax if they just got all the folks in East Tennessee to vote with them. You know, because you got, say, if you got 20 elected officials going to Nashville, they can't pass the law. They gotta have some real good friends who I vote for what you want in your town, and you vote along with me for what I want for Shelby County.
Yeah.
That's how you can get some laws passed, by having some friends that are voting, whether they like your bill or not. But they know that's gonna affect them, so they ain't going for that payroll tax. So then how you gonna go up and do more than others done? They've been trying to pass the bills since they've been there. It didn't work. So that's how you curse the candidates by all the things they tell you that they are going to do that you know they can't deliver. So you can recommend a law. You can put your name on a law all you want, but if you can't get enough votes to pass it, it can't pass.
Right.
Same way on city council, county commission, and all that.
Yeah.
You gotta have enough votes to pass the law.
Sure.
But it's easier in the local government because you might not have the 13 people to deal with,
right,
or 9 people to deal with. So then you might can encourage them to come over on your side and vote with you.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you keep politicians accountable?
Well, I'll take Vasco Smith. Vasco Smith was county commissioner. When he was a county commissioner, each county commissioner had 3 jobs. Vasco would always give me all 3 of his jobs. And that mean I could get 3 children a job that we're doing in the summer. Same way with city council. City councilors may have 10 jobs. If you know I can help you get elected, you're gonna give me some applications so some of the children in this neighborhood can get a job. Because you want their parents to go and vote for you and campaign for other people to vote for you. So if it's like when I wanted these streets out here blacktop, because they hadn't been blacktop in 40 years, I got on the city council that we need this era blacktop. We haven't had blacktop in 40 years. You know, and you blacktopping all over there, and all down there, and all over yonder. But you passing us up. We want some of this money spent in our neighborhood. So that's how it goes.
I think just learning about the Shelby County Club and how powerful it was
and what made it the Shelby County Democrat powerful back in the 50s and 60s, it was because she was under Amarella elites. And people believed in these leaders. And they voted the way these leaders would say. Because what they would do was have all the candidates to come and talk to you. Then they would pick out the candidates they felt that was going to do the best job and help the black community. So then what they did was recommend it. These people, like for governor or whatever they needed, county commissioners, city councilors, and all that stuff, they recommended who the best people was for sheriff and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that sheriff would answer to these leaders because they know they control the black vote.
And you wrote down some of the leaders that you could talk about.
Like Russell Sugar, he was a person that you could talk to, a person that you could ask for help, and any help you needed. Somebody sitting in the street, somebody can't pay their rent, they would help you back then.
Yeah.
Willis would do the same thing, and H.T. Lockett, he was an attorney, so if you needed to get small things done that you needed an attorney for, I could always say, go see H.T. Lock and tell him I sent you.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I could always say, go talk to Jesse Turner, tell him Miss Peter sent you. Because, see, I was the person in the neighborhood who was getting all these folks registered and getting them to vote a certain way along with those leaders. So then, whatever kind of help a person do, like the NAACP, if you had a problem and you felt you was discriminated against, all you had to do was go and tell Miss Maxine Smith Miss Peter sent me up here and tell them what your problem is.
Yeah.
So you would get help. Same way with Vasco, Dr. Kirk, all those leaders. They are sensitive to our needs because they remember when anything that they wanted done, we consider them as our leaders.
Yeah, yeah.
And since they were our leaders and we were going to bag them in any way, so you couldn't come pick us off one at a time. You would have to go through the leadership because they know we respected them and we depended on them. So then when we asked for something that we needed, then they would deliver because of the fact they knew who to call on when it was time for election time and they needed to get the black vote out.
The grassroots workers, people like you, doing the evangelization
on the stuff.
How many women were involved back then?
Oh, you always had more women than you ever had men. Going to church and everything else is always women. And like we had, everybody belonged to church, your minister would cooperate with you and everything. See, like every election, I used to have a big party in my backyard, but the local churches was supportive. And we have some of the biggest parties right in my backyard and have all the politicians on.
In the 50s and 60s, did you throw lawn or
home parties? Oh, we had all kind of little tea parties. Say, if you put all the people you could put in the living room, and we might then have five or six houses, one Coke party on each street.
Wow. So the Coke parties, they were fairly, like how many people typically would come to a Coke party?
See, like if I have a party at my house,
yeah,
I have 200 people in my backyard.
Okay.
Because the church would bring the speakers, the chairs, help furnish the hot dogs, you don't ask the politicians for nothing. Furnish all our own stuff. And like back in the 50s and 60s, we might have living room Coke parties.
Yeah.
You know, you have one at your house, I have one in my house just in the living room, and you have about 20 people, something like that.
Did these also serve as fundraisers?
No, we were never trying to raise funds. Most of the politicians had their own fundraisers and they invite us to.
Oh, okay.
These were just parties to get the,
the
officials out and get the people together so that people who were running could come talk to them.
Yeah.
And we served little orders and stuff like that.
Were these parties pretty much run by women?
Well, you always had some men back then.
Yeah.
You had more men back in the earlier times and to work with the ladies because their husbands worked with them. The neighbors and all got together and would help sponsor Coke parties.
Yeah, yeah.
Barbecue or anything.
Sure. In terms of the Shelby County Democrat Club in the 60s and when it first started, how many precinct clubs do you estimate there were and how many members?
I believe just about every one precinct that was in the black community represented back in the days because it was a thing where everybody had to work together to achieve anything.
Yeah. Yeah. You
had better working relationship with more precincts back then than you do now.
Yeah.
Because every ward precinct seemed to have been organized back in those days.
Now with some of the board meetings, it was the leaders who gave recommendations.
Everybody who came to the meeting could vote.
Yeah.
You know, the board would meet. You know, the people, it's like Sugarman, Willis, Walker, Locker, Vasco, Benjamin Hooks, all those people would meet first and come up with a recommendation.
Yeah.
Then when we had a regular Democrat Party meeting, they would present this to us.
Okay.
And then we would vote it up or down.
Okay.
And 90% of the time, if they had a slate of officers, you accepted it.
Sure. And did you also have the opportunity at these meetings to raise
we always did have some input.
Okay.
They didn't just, they knew how to present stuff to you. They knew how to let you take a part in it.
Yeah.
They might even call you up at home because you were leading your community.
Yeah.
You might not have been with the executive board group, but there were always leaders in the community.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
They would call you
up. And they would call you up and tell you what they, what idea they had. So you could think about it and you could tell and talk to your group about it. Before you even went to the meeting, so you would kind of be together.
Sure.
See, like the group in Waukahoma, we would kind of be together before we went to the meeting.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I would tell them what they had in mind or what they was thinking about.
Right.
Recommending to us. And then, you know, you could, we would sit down and talk about what we thought.
Yeah.
And when we got to the meeting, if this group wanted me to speak for them, I said, now when I stand up to talk, y'all stand up.